Welcome to a Juno Afternoon on Tuesday, April 3rd, 2018. I'm your host, Scott Burton. Thanks for joining us. On today's show, we'll learn about the month of the military child and Child Abuse Prevention Month. We'll get an update on library activities. Troy Quinn will preview this weekend's concerts by the Juno Symphony. Guitar maker George Gress will highlight his first Friday show at the Alaska State Museum's gift shop. And JDHS Art Club will talk about the backdrop they created for the Alaska Folk Fest, as well as their May Art Show and Art Fest. Those interviews, National Native News, Bird Note Music, and more right here live and local on a Juno afternoon. Currently 37 degrees here in the capital city.
This is National Native News. I'm Antonia Gonzalez. The U.S. Army Corps of Engineers began taking public comment Sunday on a controversial proposed copper and gold mine in southwest Alaska. Supporters say it will create much-needed jobs to the area, while others say it threatens the environment and salmon. As Avery Lill reports, those in opposition, including tribal groups, are concerned the review process is being rushed.
In December, the Pebble Limited Partnership filed its first permit application with the Corps of Engineers. The public now has 30 days to weigh in on the scope of potential environmental impacts of the project. Tribal and environmental groups accused the Army Corps of Engineers of fast-tracking Pebble's application, pointing out that the initial scoping period for other large-scale development projects in Alaska have been 75 to 106 days. Alana Hurley is executive director of the United Tribes of Bristol Bay.
The scoping piece of permitting is the public's opportunity to help the Army Corps figure out what areas they should be considering and what impacts this type of project could have on our people. And the fact that they're not giving us an adequate amount of time to do that is very, very frustrating and concerning.
State lawmakers and the Alaska Department of Natural Resources Commissioner Andy Mack have also asked the Corps of Engineers to extend the scoping period. Opponents have fought Pebble for over a decade, saying that the mine would pose an unacceptable risk to the world's largest wild sockeye salmon fishery. They gained a bit of ground in January when the U.S. EPA Administrator Scott Pruitt decided not to remove Obama-era proposed restrictions on mining in the region. Those restrictions are now essentially in limbo as the years-long permitting process moves forward. The initial public comment period ends April 30th. I'm Avery Lill in Dillingham, Alaska.
The Billings Gazette reports federal agencies have penalized the Fort Peck tribes in Montana for failing to repay more than $1 million in police grants and for not doing background checks on officers. Penalties include grant suspension. In recent years, the Bureau of Indian Affairs and the Department of Justice designated Fort Peck as high risk. The tribe, in a statement to the news agency, said issues have been resolved and they're moving forward. A Navajo code talker is being posthumously honored. The family of late code talker Adolf Nagurski is receiving a Congressional Silver Medal for his military service. In 2000, medals were authorized by Congress and produced by the U.S. Mint to recognize the contributions of Navajo code talkers in World War II. U.S. New Mexico Senator Martin Heinrich worked to authorize the approval of the medal and is taking part in a ceremony in Albuquerque Tuesday to present it to the code talker's family. A resolution has been introduced by U.S. senators to recognize American Indian, Alaska Native, and Native Hawaiian women in the United States. The resolution promotes equity, safety, and upholding the interests of Native women. Vice Chairman of the Senate Committee on Indian Affairs, Tom Udall, says as Native women are honored, they should also have equal access to resources and rights as others. More than a dozen senators sponsored the resolution, and the National Congress of American Indians is among Native groups in support of the Senate honoring. The Canadian Press reports Canada's Indigenous Services Minister Jane Philpott says the federal government has complied with a ruling over discrimination allegations against Native children. In 2016, the Canadian Human Rights Tribunal ordered an immediate overhaul of the First Nations child welfare system. The order called for more money and claimed the federal government discriminates against First Nations children because of underfunding. Philpott says the government is working with the tribunal and has fulfilled its orders. Child advocates do not see the matter settled and want more done to address child welfare funding and programs for First Nations children. I'm Antonia Gonzalez.
National Native News is produced at the Annenberg National Native Voice Studios by Kwanic Broadcast Corporation. Funding is provided by the Corporation for Public Broadcasting, with support from the Public Radio Satellite Service.
Support by the 35th Gathering of Nations Powwow. An enchanting evening is yours at the Miss Indian World Traditional Presentations Thursday, April 26th in the Kiva Auditorium, Albuquerque Convention Center. Tickets available online and at the door. Support by the AAIP and Million Hearts Think Heart Symposium. Strategies for Managing High Blood Pressure, March 14th in Oklahoma City. Registration deadline is March 5th at aaip.org/events.
Native Voice One, the Native American Radio Network.
You're listening to a Juno Afternoon here on Tuesday, April 3rd, 2018, about 6 minutes past the hour. Scott Burton, your host today, and in the studio now is Trissa Malam, and she works at AWARE, and she's the children's advocate over there, and also Ken Weber, who works for the Coast Guard as the Family Resource Specialist. Welcome to the show, Ken and Trissa.
Thank you.
Thanks so much for having us.
Nice to have you here. So it is indeed Child Abuse Prevention Month.
Yes.
Is that right?
It is. I'm here with Rock Juno because we are focusing this month on Child Abuse Prevention Month and Month of the Military Child. So I asked Ken to join us here.
And remind us the Rock Juno
acronym.
Rock
Juno is raising our children with kindness, and we are trying to promote kindness to kids in our community throughout the year, focusing on different age groups or subsets of children. And this month happens to be National Child Abuse Prevention Month and National Month of the Military Child.
Yes.
So we decided to focus on both of those things.
Okay. And so from an AWARE point of view, what are you guys up to?
Well, we have lots of support groups that we run every week, and continually going out for SART and HEART calls and providing shelter for women and children and all sorts of stuff. But really, I work with kids who have experienced abuse, and neglect, and which is a form of abuse and all sorts of stuff. And I am always available to any community member if they're curious about what constitutes child abuse or what to do if they witness child abuse, or if they're just like concerned and worried about some kids and need to kind of talk it through with another person and get some advice and support. We have a crisis line that is always open, and you're welcome to call that on our crisis line and talk to a children's advocate if you're concerned about any child that you interact with.
Okay, let's come back to that. Get your pens out, listeners. We'll get those numbers out to you here in a minute. Ken Weber, Family Resource Specialist for the Coast Guard. What's your job look like?
Oh, my job entails a lot. I am in charge of school liaison services and coordinating support services for families when they're moving in and out of Alaska, because, you know, a move can be pretty traumatic, especially when you're coming to Alaska. A lot of our families have never been to Alaska, so they're not ready for the unique challenges that they're going to face here. Seasonal affective disorder, it's dark, it's cold. One thing I faced when I moved here, and I probably should have did some research, I moved here and didn't realize you could not drive out of Juneau. And a lot of our families come here, and they're like, wait a minute, there's no road out of here. And I'm like, no.
Short road affective disorder or something like that.
There you go. Yeah. So as we were talking about, it's Month of the Military Child, and I want everyone to know that it was the brainchild of former Defense Secretary Caspar Weinberger. It started back in 1986. And it's really important that we recognize the resilience of our military kids, because they go through so much. They're constantly transitioning from communities and schools and churches, having to make new friends every 2 to 3 years. And then you've got parents, and sometimes it's often both mom and dad who are in the military. So those transitions can be hard, and then their parent deploys, so they're gone for months at a time. So me and my job, I'm there to connect them with community resources, like AEYC and AWARE, in case there is something going on. So,
well, even if there's not something going on, that move alone is very traumatic, and we work with traumatized kids. So
exactly.
That works.
So it's a great collaboration that we have going on.
Ken, you were telling me before we went on the air that you are indeed a child of a military family.
I am. Oh, my gosh. And it really was not fun growing up in the military. We lived on a military installation, so I felt like I lived in a bubble until I was about 17 years old. And then my parents, well, actually it was my mom, I'm going to say, she's like, I'm done. We need to buy a house. You're going to retire soon. So we, my parents bought their first house when I was 17 years old. And ooh, what a difference it was not living on a military installation, having to show an ID card to get home or anything like that. Even school was located on the base. So I literally was in a bubble till I was 17 years old.
What were some of the biggest challenges for you growing up?
It was having my dad gone. My dad was in the Navy, so when he deployed, he'd be gone for 9 to 18 months at a time.
Wow.
So my mom was dad, mom. She was the ruler. She ruled with an iron fist, too. So that was different for when dad was home, when dad was gone, and I was the oldest. So some parents do this, and it can be good. As long as there's a balance, me being the oldest, I was, okay, you've got to take care of kids. You're the one doing the garbage. You're taking out the garbage. You're doing the yard work. I'm like, wait, I have a brother and a sister. What are they here for?
Got it. So with that experience in mind, how do you counsel parents these days, some of your colleagues in the Coast Guard? What are some pieces of advice you may give them?
The advice I give to parents coming in, especially Juno, get out and get involved in the community. Find out what's out there. The Coast Guard has a very vibrant and alive Facebook page just for Coast Guard members that have lived here. So they're seasoned people. Hiking clubs, again, people moving up here, they don't know about what do you need to take with you when you go hiking? What are you talking about? There's bears out there. There's different things. So getting them involved, community theater, community partners, the AEYC, the AWARE, the Juno Rock. I did not know for the first 6 months I was here we had a rock climbing
gym
here. Yeah. So now that I've gotten all that, I pass that on, and parents are like, wow, our kids can really be involved in a lot. And like the Summer Expo that's coming up this Saturday.
Yes.
Parents will be taking their kids out there, signing them up for summer programs, just getting them at sports and making sure they understand safety. If you're going to go canoeing or kayaking or hiking, you've got to know safety. And something was pointed out to me when I first got here. Somebody asked me, are you a swimmer? I'm like, of course I can swim. I was active duty Coast Guard myself. And they're like, how about in the Gastineau? I'm like, if I fell out of my kayak, I can make it back. And they're like, really? It's probably about 22 degrees.
Oh, that's cold.
And I didn't even think about water temperature. So many different things that I now know that I can pass on.
Okay. The expo, the summer expo?
Yeah, Zach Gordon is hosting the youth Summer Activities Expo at Centennial Hall this Saturday
from 10 to 1.
There's going to be so many different programs and things out there that kids can get signed up for, summer camps and clubs and all sorts of really cool stuff. So if you've got a young kid and you don't know what you're going to do with them this summer when school's out, I encourage you to come to the expo.
And this is exactly what you're saying, Ken, is keep your kids involved. Get involved with the community.
Definitely. And I want to tell all of our Coast Guard families that are listening, yes, go to the expo, but also we are having a family fun festival on Saturday from 11 to 12:30. So go to the expo, get your kids signed up for an activity, and then come to the family fun festival. Have some pancakes, have some fun, and win some cool prizes.
And just staying with you for a second, Ken, in addition to this being the Child Abuse Prevention Month, this is Month of the Military Child.
Yes.
So tell us more about that.
All right. Well, a lot of people in the community, teachers, people that that interact with military kids don't understand some of the challenges they may go through, why Billy or Jane or Tom are sad or they might be a little disgruntled. Their parents are constantly they're underway, they're deployed, and with the Coast Guard here in Southeast Alaska, a lot of our Coast Guard personnel are involved in search and rescue. So their parents are going through some things, and whether they bring it home or not, kids are they pick up on things. And so if there's tension, that tension is going to carry to them, and they're going to take it to school with them, and they may be a little shut off. So just understanding that our military kids go through different challenges than a non-military child. So just let's salute them. Let's learn from them, too, because like Native Alaskan children, you can learn a history book of lesson from them. You can learn that from a military child. Kids that have probably moved 7 times and they're only 9 years old.
Okay. And you can get them involved for all those long summer days when school is out.
Oh, yeah.
This Saturday. It's at Centennial Hall from 10 to 1?
Yep, 10 to 1.
Okay, is there a cost for going
nope.
to this?
It's free to attend. I mean, the summer camps and stuff all have costs associated with them, but there's
sure.
scholarship and financial aid available for those families right then and there that we can get them hooked up with if they want that.
Okay. And thinking of Child Abuse Prevention Month, Tressa, if somebody does have a question about a child or what is child abuse, maybe they're seeing some signs or symptoms,
yep.
remind us of the number they can call.
I would encourage you can call either the Child Advocacy Center here in Juneau at 463-6157, or you can call AWARE's Crisis Line and talk to a children's advocate, and our number there is 586-1090.
And if you're associated with the military, we have a family advocacy specialist, Patricia Chapin. Her phone number is 463-2124. So if you're associated with the military and you suspect some child abuse or something going on, she should be your first phone call.
Okay. If people want more information on the Summer Expo, where's the best place to find that, Tressa?
Facebook. There is a big link on Facebook about the just Google or search on Facebook for Youth Activities Summer Expo thing, and it'll pull right up. Or look at Zach Gordon's page.
it's all over the place. I've
yep.
seen it all over Facebook.
Yeah, it's everywhere on Facebook.
All right.
And there's also a rally at the Capitol on Friday from 12 until 12:30 to support Child Abuse Prevention Month. We encourage everybody to come, wear blue, and attend and support Strengthening Families and Ending Child Abuse.
And what time does that start?
That is at 12 o'clock from 12 to 12:30 on the Capitol steps right in downtown Juneau. Please come out, support stuff, you know, get involved with your community.
Great
the best
rally.
Way to prevent child abuse is to have your kids involved and have them go into lots of different things and know on lots of different people, because the more chances they learn how to say no and the more people that are safe in their lives that they can talk to if something is happening, the better we are at preventing that.
All right. That's Tressa Malam and Ken Weber here on a Juneau afternoon. Thank you both so much for coming on the
yeah.
show.
Thank you for having
Thank
us.
You.
This is Bird Note. Are you enjoying a nice cup of morning coffee? These songbirds, the Western Tanager and the Scarlet Tanager and your latte, have a connection you may not have realized. Each spring, these tanagers arrive after a long journey from Mexico and Central America. To us, spending the winter in Mexico may seem a glorious vacation, but the tanagers must labor continually to find suitable habitat with plenty of fruits, berries, and insects. Much of their prime wintering habitat has been turned into coffee plantations.
How are you doing?
Good.
Can I guess what?
Single coffee, skinny with one sugar.
When coffee plantations employ traditional methods of growing coffee bushes under a tall canopy of trees, tanagers can enjoy a food-filled winter home. And you can rest easy with a delicious cup of shade-grown brew. But where the tall, shade-giving trees have been cut down to grow coffee in the direct sunlight, what is also removed is the habitat tanagers require to rest and feed. To be sure the tanagers continue to return for the summer, consider reaching for shade-grown coffee. It's satisfying to know that even a simple change in habits can have a positive impact on birds.
Support comes from Sasquatch Books, announcing Bird Note, the book, full of illustrations and stories of 100 birds. More at sasquatchbooks.com.
You're listening to a Juneau afternoon here on Tuesday, April 3rd, about 20 minutes past the top of the hour. And here in the studio now is Beth Weigel and Andy Hirsch. We're going to be getting an update on the Juneau Public Libraries. Welcome to the show, you two.
Thank you.
All right. What's first on the list?
I think the first thing we want to do is say a really big thank you. So as we hope most people in the community know, the library has been hosting an exhibit called Discover Tech Engineers Make a World of Difference. And the very last day to see this exhibit is on Friday. So if you haven't yet been to the Valley Library, head over any time and check it out. It's very, very cool.
Very interactive.
And very interactive. That's true. Thank you, Beth. And there's a lot of people who helped us to get the exhibit and to put it together and to do a bunch of the cool stuff that we did. So first, I want to say thank you to our sponsors. So we got financial backing from the Friends of the Juneau Public Library, the Juneau Community Foundation, the Alaska Airlines Community Foundation, the Avista Foundation, and Eric Antrim. And so that allowed us to do school field trips. So we did 91 classrooms. We brought 91 classrooms or homeschool groups to the library, and we made them be engineers. We made kids be engineers, and they either designed something, and then they also got to tour the exhibit. And so that was really,
right, and the
really
things
neat
that they got to design was, the older kids were doing water filters, which you can imagine was a really crazy time in our large meeting room, having lots of dirty water to clean. And the younger kids have been doing these last couple weeks levers and learning all about levers and leverage and all that good stuff.
And that goes through this Friday?
That's right.
At the
Valley Library.
Valley,
yep.
Library.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
And then we also had a lot of community partners, so I just want to thank a couple different people. So there's the Juneau STEM Coalition, the American Society of Civil Engineers, the Alaska Section, the Juneau School District for partnering with us, and the Alaska Department of Transportation and Facilities. So all these different groups helped put on programs and helped us connect with the public.
And we also had some amazing volunteers come and help us as well, so we want to make sure we give a shout-out to all the volunteers that helped as well.
And I think last time when we were on, we were sort of talking about how the library isn't just a place to come get books anymore. It's a place to go where you're going and doing these interactive hands-on experiments.
That's right. Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's a really exciting time in libraries, and there's lots of amazing things that can happen in the library, including some other great programs we have this month. So just to say thank you to some of our volunteers before we move on to that, though. Nancy Waterman and Bill Lady, Shay Wilson, Rachel Friedenlauter, Ann Fuller, Jean Shannon, Chris Thomas, and some of the folks from the Coast Guard came and helped us. So we're really thankful to them as well. But some of the things we've got going on coming up is one thing that's fun that we've done regularly throughout the year is Tabletop Game Day. And we also just added something really neat to the library. So you say, oh, it's not just a place to check out books. Well, it's not been that for a long time. You can come and get, like, you know, video games and movies and all kinds of other media, CDs. But now
it's very exciting. So now we have board games for people to check out. We're really, really excited about it. We have a sample collection of about 40 different games. And they range in ages that might be 4 and up, you know, aimed at small kids. And we have some much more complicated ones that are aimed, you know, like 12 or 13 to adult. And so you can come and check them out and play them, take them home with you. They check out for 2 weeks, and then you have to bring them back.
Do you have Scrabble?
We do not.
Wow. Can I add that to the request list as an English major?
We have a really fun one, a game called Word on the Street, which I really like, and it involves having to come up with words, and you pull the letters towards you as you use them, and so you're on a team, and both sides are trying to get the letters. And so
come check it out.
Yeah, and a lot of these games are, you know, sometimes high cost, and they're complex, and so you don't really know what you're getting into, maybe, if you haven't played them, or you're looking for something and you want to play. So that's why we've been hosting lots of game days in conjunction with Platypus Gaming, but now you can actually, like, take the game home and try it out, and, you know, maybe you'll choose to buy it or something later, but it gives you the opportunity to get through some of the complex rules and you know, challenge each other and have some fun at home before you make that decision.
And did you say there is another game day coming up?
There is. So we're celebrating International Tabletop Game Day, and that's April 21st. It's going to be at the Mendenhall Valley Public Library, and it runs from 11 a.m. to 5 p.m., so you can come anytime. And there will be people there who can teach you how to play games, and there'll be people to play games with, and it's for all ages.
Okay, what else is going on?
A lot of fun.
We've got our fun family night happening on the 19th at the Valley this month, as well as through the summer. So that's the third Thursday of every month, and family night will be out at the Valley for the summer, and including this month as well. And then probably there'll be more information about this, but just so it's on everybody's radar, the Early Learning Fair, which is in conjunction with AEYC, is happening on the 24th of the month out at the Valley as well from 4 to 6:30. And basically lots of different organizations come, and it's everything to help parents get ready for their child to go to kindergarten. So lots of different organizations come, so you can, you know, do an eye test or get this or get that, and it's really fun. And then the big thing that we're excited about later in the month, with, which I know you'll hear more about too, is the comic convention that we do in partnership with Alaska Robotics.
Yeah, so the Comic-Con.
That'll be on the 27th. It'll be the kickoff again out at the Valley Library in the late afternoon, and then all day at the Arts and Culture Center on the 28th. So we're excited.
Yeah, lots going on at the library. Remind us the best place to keep in touch with you.
You can check our website at juno.org/library, and it's a kind of newly retooled website, so you can always find things on the calendar, but you can click onto the printed calendar to kind of narrow it down to the things that are sponsored as programs by us, rather than all the just public meetings and things like that that take place. Or you can always give us a call at 586-5249.
We also have a Facebook page where we promote upcoming events, and so you can find us at facebook.com/library events.
All right, so Discover Tech ends this Friday. Game Day is on the 21st.
Mm-hmm.
Family Night's on the 19th. Early Learning Fair is on the
24th.
And the Comic-Con is
the 27th. Kickoff and 28th is the big event over at the Jack. And, of course, we have our ongoing story times and toddler times and Tlingit language learning groups and things like that, English class, ESL. So there's lots of those kind of ongoing programs as well that you can find on our calendar.
We've been speaking with Beth Weigel and Andy Hirsch. A ton going on at the Juno Public Libraries. Find them on Facebook, at their website. Thank you both for coming on the show. Anything else you'd like to add?
Thank you for having us.
Yeah, it's a great April.
Anytime.
KRNN proudly presents the broadcast of the 44th Annual Alaska Folk Festival. Kicking off on April 9th at 7 p.m., listen live each night on KRNN on 102.7 or view the live web stream at krnn.org. This broadcast is made possible by generous support from Southeast Radiation Oncology Center and Northwind Architects. This is the Alaska Folk Festival live on KRNN, April 9th through the 15th. Tune in.
the Jack and KTOO for April's art classes, the not your typical sip and paint classes with Deborah from Martha's Flowers and Gifts. Deborah will work her floral magic and guide you step by step in creating a beautiful floral head wreath. Wear it to Folk Fest, rock it around town. So many ways to wear a floral head wreath. April 12th, 5:30 to 7:30 p.m. at TK McGuire's. All supplies included, no host bar, and food available. Tickets at jahc.org.
You're listening to a Juno Afternoon here on Tuesday, April 3rd. We're right at the bottom of the hour. Scott Burton, your host today, and joining me in the studio now is Joe Davis Fleming. He is the new ED of the Juno Symphony. Troy Quinn, who you know, conductor and Roald Simonson, filmmaker and collaborator with the Juno Symphony. Everyone, welcome to the show.
Hi, Scott.
Hi, Scott. Hi. Thank you.
It's nice to have you here. Troy, should we start with you to outline what we're in store for this weekend?
Sure. We've got a great, great weekend ahead, Scott. We're pulling out all the stops for this wonderful concert we're calling Sacred and Sublime. We have two concerts, one on Saturday, 8 p.m. at JDHS, and Sunday, 3 p.m. at JDHS, with a pre-concert lecture before. This is a really in-depth look at the music and behind the scenes, what it takes to produce a concert like this, and also to have a chance to speak with some of the artists. So I will be there as well as our soloists. We are doing Fauré's Requiem, an amazing piece, collaborating with the Juno Symphony Chorus and the Juno Douglas High School Choir. We've got 85 singers, and we have two soloists, international soloists, coming in from New York and Los Angeles. So they will be joining me for the pre-concert lecture on both Saturday and Sunday. This work we're so excited to bring to Juno. First time the symphony has performed it in its entirety.
Very exciting. Joe Davis Fleming, welcome to the team. When did you come on board?
Well, I was officially appointed a little over 2 months ago, and very, very happy to be back in Juno after being away for several years. But I actually got on the ground a week ago today, so hitting the ground running, and so pleased to be and thrilled to be part of this very talented group of folks, and fortunate to be part of the team. Thank you.
Yeah, and with a great weekend coming up. Roald, tell us about your relationship to this production.
I made a video that's going to be projected above the symphony on a large screen. And while it's being projected, a piece of music is going to be played, Arthur Honegger's Pastoral d'été. That's French, and that means summer pastoral. And I want to tell you about some of the little background and be brief about the video, but I think I'm going to defer to Troy to just describe the piece and how he chose it, because it began with him choosing this particular piece of music and then engaging me.
Right, Roald. And for this particular program, I wanted this piece really lends itself to some video projection, and the Honegger wrote this piece based on the Swiss Alps. He was a Swiss composer, and so he took inspiration from that. And I went to Roald and I said, you know, this would be a great opportunity to do a video montage, intersperse some paintings with live film clips. And Roald came back and said, you know, I actually was in Switzerland, and I had this film from about 20 years ago. Now might be the time to use it. And thus, I gave him really no parameters, and this was born.
Yeah. Wow. A true collaboration.
Yeah. So, I mean, basically, the story is this piece of music. I sort of listened to it the first time. It's gorgeous. It's a, you know, tone poem, about 8 minutes long, and it's very evocative of an alpine, as in Swiss Alps. And rather than trying to find an equivalent for Alaska, especially because it's a summer pastoral and it was sort of, it's been winter here, it just didn't lend itself to the music. Really, it just simply wasn't Alaska. I've done other things kind of where you make that equivalency and it's cool, but this time I said, you know, okay, we're going to do a little travel voyage to Switzerland, because it turns out I have spent a long time there. I have a friend I met in Berlin once, and she was invited me to her place, and I better not tap on that. And they have, her family has a house up in the Swiss Alps, you know, picture perfect, very near where Onegar, you know, composed this piece of music. And years ago, we're talking like 20 years ago, it's in sort of VHS rather than digital era. I was up there, and we're walking around in her little Swiss Alpen village, Rouen, and I'm looking out in the field, and there's this crazy pig out there that I asked the farmer there, what is that? And he says in a Swiss dialect, it's a Tibetische Hängebauchschwein, which means a Tibetische Hängebauchschwein, which means a Tibetan hanging billy pig. Which it's like it's very odd to see a Tibetan pig in the middle of the Alps. And I decided I was lucky to have free time. I said, I'm going to spend a day filming this pig in the Alps, in the farmyard there. And there's donkeys and there's ducks and the sky changes and it's like a day with a pig. And I never knew what I was going to do with these 10 hours of footage. And now people can come to the symphony and see what I've made use, at least, of some of it. I've also interspersed some, there's a kind of fantastic Swiss painter that I'd seen his stuff in Zurich last October, Ferdinand Odler. He's kind of mystical, sort of women doing Eurythmy dance in alpine meadows, and it goes back and forth, I think.
We're affectionately calling this A Day in the Life of a Pig.
Yes, but you've heard it all.
The symphony, 85 singers. You know, we also have Rold and the video. How did you bring this all together?
Well, we're a little crazy, Scott, but it takes a lot of teamwork. We have a talented team here now with Joe joining us, and Bruce Simonson is our chorus master here in town, Rold's brother, actually, so the talent runs deep, as well as Richard Moore's the high school director, so he's been working with his high school kids on the choral piece. And the two soloists are colleagues of mine, actually, a long, long time friends. So we've brought all the talent together to make this happen, and it's really going to be a beautifully evocative and very inspiring concert, I think.
Okay. Joe, can you please remind us the details and the times this weekend?
Certainly. So Saturday evening's concert begins at 8, and Sunday matinee concert at 3 p.m. And each one has a pre-concert conversation with our maestro, Dr. Troy Quinn, and so those are always very popular. So we still have tickets on sale and plenty of great seats. I also like to make everyone aware that we can always use volunteers to help us pull together the day of the event, whether it's collecting tickets or ticket sales. And what you get in return is complimentary admission into the concert of your choice, whether it's for yourself or a friend or a family member.
Okay, and those talkbacks are usually
an hour before. Yep, an hour before.
7 p.m. on Saturday or 2 p.m. on Sunday?
Correct.
Best place to get tickets?
JunoSymphony.org.
Yes, or you can stop by our office at 522 West 10th Street. The tickets are also on sale at various venues like the Jack, so in our favorite bookstores here in town.
Okay, well, I have a lot more questions, but we have some more guests to get to today. Thank you all so much for coming on the show.
Thanks, Scott.
This weekend, Sacred and Sublime. See them at Juno Douglas High School, 8 p.m. on Saturday, 3 p.m. on Sunday. Both shows do have talkbacks. Tickets at JunoSymphony.org and the regular spots, it sounds like. Thanks for coming on the show, everyone.
Thanks so much,
Scott.
Okay.
KTOO is supported by listeners like you and by Breezen, offering a large selection of wine, beer, and spirits at three Juneau locations. The Growler Station at the Lemon Creek Breezen carries rotating draft beers from Alaska and the U.S. Information at Breezen.com.
You're listening to a Juneau Afternoon here on Tuesday, April 3rd. Scott Burton, your host, about 15 minutes till the top of the hour. In the studio now is guitar maker George Gress. And he has a First Friday guitar show at the Alaska State Museum's gift shop this Friday. George, great to have you back on the show.
Good to see you again. Nice to be here.
Okay. So I think some of our listeners might be aware of what you do, but remind us just in case they don't know.
You mean when I'm not being a grandfather?
Exactly. Exactly.
Yeah. So about 3 years ago, I began making guitars and trying to focus on Alaskan woods. We have a lot of really fine woods that are right here in the Tongass. So I began trying to make my guitars out of those, yellow cedar, spruce, hemlock, the local woods.
And mostly electric guitars, right?
Mostly electric guitars. I have made one acoustic. And it's a beautiful guitar. It's kind of wonky because it was my first one, but it sounds good.
Okay. And your website is Gress?
Yeah, it's now I have to think. ggress.com.
ggress.com, yeah. In case anyone's by their computer and wants to look at some of these. I know you have great pictures of your guitars on your website. You've shown, I know, let's see, at the distillery.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, last year's Canvas.
This is my third First Friday. The one was at the Canvas. And then last year, as you said, at the Amalga Distillery. And this year, APK has decided to do a series of First Fridays, and this is their first First Friday. And since I had a couple of guitars on display down there, they asked me to do more of mine.
So these sound, you were describing before we went on the air, these new guitars sound like a little bit of a departure from what you've been up to the last couple of years. Tell us about it.
Well, I'm always trying something new, and sometimes it just turns into firewood, but lots of times it turns out fine. And before I get too far away from it, I want to mention a little bit about the APK. Katrina Wolford and Sarah Aspersmith are the creative forces behind it, and they've gone all over Alaska to feature Alaskan artists and writers. So it's a great place for Alaskan books, visual art, physical art, carved pieces. They've put together a great display, and I'm really lucky to be a part of it. And it, as I say, I usually have at least one guitar hanging there. So,
okay.
So what's unusual? Usually I try to do Alaskan woods, and I was lucky enough that a commercial fisherman friend of mine went up to Haines to visit his stepfather and came back with about 100 pounds of spalted birch, which is just this beautiful, unusual wood that I've been able to make quite a few guitars out of. So that it's kind of, it almost looks like leopard skin. It's so beautiful and spalted. So I made some of those will be on display.
And what does that term spalted mean?
Spalted is odd because it means if the wood, after it's cut, if it lays wet, it gets a fungus in it. And the fungus will tend to just take over the structure of the wood. If you don't catch it just right, you've got a moldy pile of nothing. If you catch it just right, it's just beautiful wood.
And is that interesting that sometimes the most irregular woods are the ones that luthiers and guitar makers like you like to work with?
I think it's true. It is true. We like the unusual woods. Yes.
Okay. How many guitars are you going to bring out this Friday?
I think there'll be 10 guitars and then a couple of unusual instruments. One, I've made a steel guitar out of a skateboard using the idea of roots music, which is where you kind of take what you have around the house. So a lot of the hardware on that steel guitar is cabinet pulls, that kind of thing.
That's great. Excellent. And that was your skateboard from riding around the neighborhood, right?
No, but I found that long-haired guy in Oregon that sold me one.
All right. And what else do you have besides a skateboard guitar?
Oh, my. The other unusual one is a three-string diddly bow. The diddly bow is kind of a do-it-yourself guitar that came out of the South. They would just take a 2x4, a beer bottle, and a piece of baling wire and stretch it across the 2x4 and make a guitar out of it. So mine is the three-string diddly bow made with spalted birch, and it's electrified. So it gets really dirty.
Okay. Roots Music is accessible guitars.
Yeah.
Yeah, very cool. What's your favorite part about doing this these days?
I often have to think about that, but what it is for me that keeps me headed out to the shop is the challenge. Often things don't work out the way I thought they would at first, and so I've got to go back and redesign, restructure, re-engineer, and reinvent. So there's always that.
Okay. I wish we had more time, George.
It's no problem.
But we're going to have to send all our listeners to your first Friday show at the APK.
And it's right next to your first Friday show, the Folk Life.
I think there might be a picture of you somewhere this show.
That would be great. Well, thanks for your time, Scott.
Yeah, absolutely. And these shows usually seem to start around 4:30. Is that when your show starts?
Yeah, it looks like Sarah's put 4 to 7 on this one. So we'll be there.
All right. You've been listening to the voice of guitar maker George Gress. He will have 10 or so guitars handmade here in the capital city down at the Alaska State Museum's gift shop, the APK, the SLAM, here in the Willoughby Arts District, 4:30 this first Friday. Otherwise, you can find them at ggress.com. GGRESS.com. George, thank you so much for coming on the show. What are we about to listen to here? This is some music I think you and...
I'm not sure which piece this is, but my son Tyler and his friend Joe have a band, and I was lucky enough to play along with them on some of their pieces.
Here we go. Thanks, George.
Thank you. Thank you.
listening to a Juno Afternoon here on Tuesday, April 3rd. In the studio now is Heather Ridgway. She teaches art at Juno Douglas High School. Heather, it's great to have you in the studio.
It's good to be here.
So you guys did the backdrop for the Folk Fest?
Yes.
Main
stage? Yeah, another extraordinary art club year.
I bet.
Got some great kids.
Paint a picture in our listeners' minds, if you would.
Well, we kind of went a little crazy, I'd say. We decided we wanted to do it. Somebody asked me if I wanted to do it last summer, and I thought, you know, I don't want to do it by myself, but it would be a fun project to do with kids. I used to work in theater with Perseverance. So I posed it to the kids this year, and they said, absolutely, that would be so fun. And I said, okay, it's time to start putting together some ideas, you know, bring me some drawings, and it's got to be about this big. And I got a whole bunch of napkin drawings and heard a lot of debate. People wanted to talk about it for about 5 months. And then it was like, no, guys, like, you have to actually have a drawing. And so Mari Bell, one of my sophomore students, she built a scale model, and that motivated people. They started bringing in things and seeing if it fit. And
Mari's getting an A, by the way.
Oh, yeah.
Right.
And then I did a mock-up of kind of a quilt idea I had, because I have all this vellum that's been donated by engineering firms and architectural offices, and I was like, what if we could make it all out of vellum, free stuff that I already have?
Remind us what vellum is.
Vellum's like a kind of like a plastic paper that architects and engineers used to use. It's see-through, but it's really sturdy, wonderful stuff, and I've got a lot of it. And so I realized when I did that I was going to have to hand sew it all together. So it really was going to be a quilt, and it was going to take longer than we had. But seeing my backdrop up there motivated people, and I got a lot of great ideas then. And we decided at winter break, okay, day we get back, let's have the Folk Fest board in, and they choose from our scale models. So on January 8th, first day back at school after winter break, we all joined in the art room for lunch, and a couple of Folk Fest board members were there, and they looked at our presentation of about 8 different, very different backdrop ideas. And interestingly, they sort of picked 2. So we've been mashing up these 2 ideas and making them go together, and it's really been a good time. Bo Anderson's letting us use the Juno Douglas High School scene shop, which is great because it means we don't have to fold it up and put it away. You know, it's on the wall, and we can go in and work on it when we have time. So we've been working on it all semester.
Does it have a theme?
Well, the backdrop choices were a beautiful painted mountainscape by Grace Wally, and then a 3D kind of fabric and wire sculpture piece by Riley Statt. So we took the wire part of the 3D one and the mountain painting background, and we used a bunch of other people's ideas. Somebody wanted Northern Lights and musical, you know, musical stream, and put it together, and it looks great. We played with some ideas of translucence. We used dye instead of paint in some places, hoping that maybe we could put some light through it. We ended up, hopefully, we'll have light play on the front with our 3-dimensional wire-based design pieces.
Okay, so Folk Fest is next week.
Mm-hmm.
Set up is Sunday. This coming Sunday, the festival starts on Monday. When will you hang it?
Well, Wednesday we're going to take it off the pipe in the scene shop and lay it down flat on a clean floor and roll it up on a big sonotube so we can carry it over there. We're scheduled to meet at 7:45 a.m. on Sunday before Folk Fest and be over at the Centennial Hall at 8 o'clock hanging it up.
How exciting. What a great experience for your kids.
Oh, I think it's been just wonderful. They're hanging in there. They're having a good time, and it's a surprise every day.
Great. But that's not all that's on your agenda right now, right?
Hanging the backdrop's really the big one right now. We made a few extra fish that part of the backdrop are these 3-dimensional fish, and some of them didn't fit in the end. So we're going to auction off our fish in the lobby, hoping to raise some money for Art Fest. Art Fest is in Craig this year, and that will be April 25th to the 28th, and that's an exciting event. I get to take I'm invited to take 10 of my best art students, but it's in Craig, so it's an expensive journey.
Right.
Yeah, we fly into Ketchikan and take a ferry over to POW and a 2-hour bus ride from there. And then we got to get ourselves back in time for school on Monday.
And when you get there, are you looking at other art? Are you making art while you're there? What's it look like?
Everybody brings something they made from home, and then they sign up for two workshops. And within 3 days, there's 15 hours of each workshop. So you go to a workshop for 3 hours, you go to lunch, you go to your second workshop for 3 hours, you go to dinner, you go back to your first workshop for 3 hours. Next morning, you get up and do it again. You do that 3.5 days in a row. There's a big art show at the end where they announce best of every workshop, honorable mentions for the workshops, best of all the artwork brought from home, best of the show overall, and then the surprise Kurt Garbisch Award every year.
Okay, so that is not cheap, but it sounds like a great experience again for these young artists to go and
amazing.
Do this.
Yeah.
And by buying, is this one of the fish behind you that I see? By buying one of these fish in the auction at Folkfest, you can help young artists in our community.
Yes, help them attend ArtFest and keep ArtFest going strong.
Okay, we have about 40 seconds left here. Heather, is anything else that you'd like to share?
I just uploaded my Allstate representations digital competition online, and those will be posted on April 20th. You'll be able to go on alaskaart.org and see who wins statewide. I chose Claire Scott, Juliana Kawakami, and Stephen Ireland Haight to represent Juno Douglas High School.
Very cool. In the meantime, buy some fish during Folkfest, right?
Yeah. And I can't wait. Thanks.
Thank you so much. Thanks for tuning in to a Juno Afternoon. Shelley Delaney will be your host tomorrow. It's currently 37 degrees here in the capital city, and Wednesday's forecast calls for mostly sunny skies with highs around 40, east winds to 10 miles per hour.